This is the show that pulls back the industry curtain. We're exploring pop culture, music icons, and food gods. It's the Jeremiah Show with Dr. D and Will Knox. Broadcasting from the HJL Hospitality and Evolve Studios in LA and KZSB AM 1290 and FM 96.9 Santa Barbara, or somewhere from the road. And now, Mr. Restaurant, Will Knox.
With Will Knox, I am he, Will Knox, in the studio today with Larry Lorenzo Nicola. I got to tell you, folks, there's nobody else that I know in the business of restaurants who is as hospitable and as conceptual as Larry Lorenzo Nicola. Larry, welcome. I'm going to refer to you as Larry, Lorenzo, or
Nick. Anything you like. It's Nick. All good.
There we go. You know, welcome to Mr. Restaurant.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being on the show today. You know, you really have quite a history of, you know, not just restaurant development, but you got a way with people and you've got a way with food and marketing and business. And, you know, what I'd really like to do is explore your origins. Where were you born and where did you really get this kind of knack for restaurant touring?
Well, I'm a Silver Lake guy. I was born in Silver Lake and my father had a market there. My father and his twin brother, Nicola Twins Market. It was on the corner of Sunset and Fountain for 45 years. And not only was my father in the meat business and market, but my grandmother, Nabiha, was kind of the host to the Lebanese community. She cooked all the bread for the church, and she was the big caterer, and she taught Shakespeare and Arabic. She was a pretty dynamic woman. And, but I really was in, there was food all around me. We catered, we had parties all the time, but I learned really to cut meat and groceries and stuff in my dad's market. And, but I got this real passion, this real love to feed people from my grandmother. And I, when she washed my hands as a little child, she washed it with ivory soap. And if you could remember that feeling, it was like she gave me the love to feed people and the ability to understand food and through her hands. And I give her a lot of credit for that. Then, of course, learning from my dad, my uncles, and my mother, of course, and all the food. And we had we're Lebanese, 110% Lebanese. So we were always cooking. And I learned the style of our cooking pretty well. And that's so I've carried it through my life. And I've never had any Lebanese restaurant till just now, but I have that passion for my heritage.
So you're second generation. Your dad or your grandmother actually emigrated here to the States?
Yeah, my grandparents came through Ellis Island. My parents are from North Dakota and West Virginia.
They went from Ellis Island to North Dakota. How did that come about?
I don't know. Somebody had a room up there. You know, the immigrants come and they go where their relatives are. And
they go where their relatives are. Exactly. So yeah. Then they settled in L.A. And then you get into this world of cutting meat and the marketplace and all the rest. Did you ever contemplate any other business than being around food and hospitality? I mean, how did hospitality get into your blood?
When I was a little kid, I had an idea for a restaurant called Larry's Octagon. And it had different foods in different corners, eight corners, eight sides. And it had eight different foods with the United Nations of seating in the middle. So I was always concerned with how people get fed, how you find good ingredients, how you touch food, and how you serve food. So I was always been a restaurant guy.
And did you go to traditional schooling and go to college, or did you just come out of high school and say, I'm in the rough and tumble world?
Well, I always wanted to be in the restaurant business, but I never knew exactly where. But when I before I opened my first restaurant, I was in the wholesale produce business. So I was in every restaurant from Chasen's to Yesterday's to Old World. All those restaurants were my clients. So I was in all those restaurants. So I was learning about the restaurant business in the 70s and the late 70s. And then I started the wholesale produce business. Then I saw this building. I was at my dad's market on Sunset Boulevard, and somebody sent me a photo from a restaurant in Austria. And it was this two-story building and with flowers in front. It was a beautiful restaurant. And I looked at this postcard, then I looked across the street, and there was the same building. But that building across the street was boarded up. So I went and asked them what they're doing with this building. And they said, no, we're leaving. I said, well, I want to rent it. So I rented it and raised the money and opened my first restaurant. And that was, I had eight guys from the varsity football team from Marshall High, including Michael Rotundi, the famous architect from Morphosis, to help me open my first restaurant. So I was kind of blessed with having a real great design guy. And plus all the trades were all around me. My brother was the contractor, and we opened this restaurant, and I really didn't know too much about it, but I never really thought about it. People say, well, I can't do that. I go, well, don't think about it. Just do it, you know? And we did it. And it was a successful restaurant for about 13, 14 years.
So you got the inspiration for this particular building from another building in Austria that literally mimicked the building that you're in?
It was the first venture.
How cosmic
building
was that?
Yeah, it was weird. It was kind of God saying, here you go, buddy.
And what was that first concept?
L.A. Nicola.
And what was the concept of the food and the ambiance? I mean, how did this come to you?
Every restaurant I've had has been my original food. I have the building, and I think I have the ability to say this belongs here, and I can create it. You know, you picked up a lot of things during. You know, when you're trying to develop this concept, but it was, you know, some traditional foods, you know, there was chicken Kiev, and there was steak Diane all of Brazil, and there was all these things. And I was learning about cooking at that time when we started this restaurant. So I would hire chefs, and really I would learn from the chefs. And I had so many good chefs that I brought in that I learned from them. And by the time, you know, we got it really going, I was on my way. You know, we went through, first it was kind of basic cuisine. Then it was nouvelle cuisine. Then everybody hated that. So we went back to just kind of like our own original cuisine. And it worked really well. We had a great bar called the Martini Lounge. And that was where the martini thing started for me. You know, the Martini Lounge.
We'll get into the Vod Box and the Martini Lounge in a little bit. But ostensibly, are you then saying you build the menu to the venue? You have this venue set up first. You find this location. You go, oh, I know what I can put in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's my thing, that I can take a look at a building and I go, this is what goes in this building.
And what are the challenges really when you're setting something like that up? Here you are. How old were you at the time? 23, 24, 25?
No, it was about 28, 29.
28. And you were not a chef. You were learning the intricacies of the kitchen. You now think of yourself as a chef, right?
Yes.
So ostensibly, when you started out, though, you were getting all this knowledge just on the ground, just picking it up as you go. That took a lot of balls, excuse the expression.
Yeah. You know, I hired a chef in my first restaurant. I hired a chef, and I was going to be in the front because I'm pretty good out in front talking to people and schmoozing. And so
Jewish.
We had a night where I said, okay, let's try some of the food we're going to make. And, you know, he started cooking. I go, wow, man, I'm much better than you. Why don't you go out in front? I'll go in the back. And that's how I started in the back. So I knew I was much better than him, so I just said, let's switch, and I'll go out, I'll get in the back. And that's what I did.
Were there any real challenges in this first operation? Something that really kind of, you know, held you back or you really had to overcome? I mean, raising money is obviously not an easy thing to do. How did you even get the money?
That's like putting needles in your eyes. Every time you do it, it's like, you know, you hate to ask people because, you know, sometimes most of them are your friends. So you don't want to ask them, but you get lucky. I was lucky when I like, it just happens, you know, you just kind of keep going and it just happens as long as you want it to happen. And you can back up your words. I think that it happens for you.
So. Well, ostensibly, when you go into this location, you're now in a world that you're not too familiar with. You're also in a world of Los Angeles that is not too familiar with what you're all about. And certainly this cuisine is new into this world. So it's really kind of revolutionary what you're doing at that point in your young life, right?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I was blessed with, you know, kind of being fearless and, you know, willing to take on the challenge and actually
fearless,
pretty good with people too, you know. Yeah. So it was fun, and it was fun, man. It was a ball, man. We had those were some wild times in the 80s, I got to say. So, but we had really a wonderful time.
Well. From there, that was what, a 10-year run there?
13 years.
L.A. Nicolo, 13 years.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
Then we were approached by Mitsui Fudosan. They were opening in the San Juan Bank Plaza, and it was a...
Downtown L.A.?
Yeah, 53-story building, really a gorgeous, gorgeous building. And so we... I decided I'm going to make the move. It, during that time, you know, after that run, the riots and it was getting pretty tough. I don't know. It was a really down. It was depressed time right there. So I decided to sell the restaurant and go down to the San Juan Bank Plaza. I don't think it was, in retrospect, I don't think it was a great idea. It was, you know, you have this ideas of, you know, this wonderful restaurant, beautiful brand new restaurant, and this beautiful high rise. Well, we did it, and architecturally, it was picked as one of the five American gems in American architecture.
And who did the architecture there?
That was Michael Rotondi.
Rotondi.
Roto at that time. And it was like, it had like these whale bones into the ceiling and these big stone rocks. And it was really out of this world and really an art place, art piece to be sure. But when we opened that restaurant, the riots started and nobody came downtown.
So this is what, 89, 90?
No, this is
92. Yeah, 93, yeah. Right. Yeah. And, so downtown was really a happening spot just before that time. That's what
just before that. Then after that, nobody came downtown. So we stayed open for lunch and we kind of limped through it. Then I finally sold that. And somebody told me about a restaurant in Beverly Hills that was closed down, was called the Milk Bar. And so I went out to see it. It was boarded up I think bought it for $1,000 or something. And that's when Beverly Hills, that it was on Cannon Drive and it was kind of depressed. So I went in there and did all the demo myself. It was two big rooms and did all the demo rest myself and rearranged the kitchen and opened it up, raised some money again for the third time and opened that up. And it was there for 19 and a half years.
Well, I can tell you, you're a forerunner. I had my office for years down on Cannon Drive, and there was mostly real estate offices. There was some retail. There was a lot of showbiz offices, that type of thing. But really, there was nothing on Cannon in the way of restaurants. It was mostly on Beverly Drive in Beverly Hills or even on Rodeo Drive. And you were a forerunner to that. And now Cannon Drive, you can't touch. It's Restaurant Row, you know, for Beverly Hills. And we're going to talk more about what happened, you know, after you left. We'll be breaking in a little bit. But, you know, it's essentially, you know, you seem to have a background that's multidimensional operationally, but also ethnically. What I've always been attracted to in your cuisine is that it spans, it's like Pangea, You know, it's I don't know even know the right term for it, but you're across the globe with a lot of your ideas and your cuisine, whether it's, you know, a Russian vodka or gravlax or ceviche from Mexico. You've had some big roots in Mexico. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I started consulting a little bit when I was asked to go to, first I went to Arizona and did a resort, and these movie people owned this resort, and they were losing about $40,000 a month. It wasn't a huge resort, but that's a lot of money to be losing. So I went in there, and in 4 months I was breaking even and created a whole new cuisine for them. And that's when I really kind of got out of the box and was, you know, flew to destinations and go, okay, this is what we need here, and started doing it. And it worked. And I visited there about a month ago, and it's really nice. Yeah. That was a Tubac Golf Resort. And then I got asked to go to.
That was in Arizona.
Yeah. Then I got asked to go to Palmia, which was a grand resort in Cabo San Lucas, world-class resort.
The one and only.
Now they call it the one and only. And that was owned by, what's his name from Newport Beach?
Newport Beach.
It'll
come to you.
So I redid the whole hotel, the food and beverage. I was the director of food and beverage operations and executive chef. And then Jack Nicklaus came in to open the golf resorts, the golf course. So that was one of the first golf courses in Cabo. So I was in that whole time. And in those days, you couldn't even get wine into Mexico. So it was difficult. It was fun. It was outrageous. And it was, you know, I started a farm also. I started a farm about.
Wait a second. Did you have Nick's at the time? You're operating Nick's in Beverly Hills?
I had Nick's.
So you're really kind of stretching it a little bit. You're operating a restaurant and you're also consulting down in Cabo, but you're spending.
And I was commuting there back and forth.
Yeah. That must have been very stressful. Because you've got family.
They came with me sometimes, and sometimes I'd go alone, but I was traveling. I was all over the place, and I was stayed down there for about a year and a half. I surfed at that time, and I never even got in the water. I was working so hard. When you'd fly in and you're working, then you fly out, you just never had time to really enjoy it. But I ended up going back, and with the farm I started was really great. I was credited with starting the organic movement to the upscale resorts in the Cabo area. I started a farm, and we serviced the restaurant, and then from that farm they started serving all the hotels on the corridor there.
So you've spent quite a bit of time there, and you're wanting to surf, but you're not getting up to Toto Santos or any of those places, right?
No, just
that's frustrating. You
know, but it was really rewarding, and I just loved the area. And then I did a Cadencia, a golf resort down there. It's another grand resort. I did.
Are you a golfer? Are you a golfer yourself?
Oh, I love golf.
You do?
I love golf. Yeah, you know that.
Is that your meditation?
That's my meditation.
Is that your form of meditation? What are you doing? What do you do in the morning? Listen, the restaurant business is very stressful. So what do you do at the crack of dawn when you're really just kind of getting your, you know, engine going? Do you meditate or do you go out and play golf? I mean,
I meditate in the morning.
You do?
Every day I wake up, I get back in and meditate for, you know, at least 15 minutes.
So that gets you started.
Yep. So you know, it's the best 15 minutes you spend in your day, really. You know, it's you're doing absolutely nothing with yourself but enjoying yourself. So I think that's a pretty good thing.
Well, that's very inspirational. And that leads me into the question of inspiring people. That seems to be something that you really thrive on and others really, you know, get from you. And that's what keeps your team really cohesive. It seems to me that inspiration, do you have inspiration from others? Have you taken your inspiration from others? Is there one person that really stands out for you that's inspired you? Not just as a restaurateur, but just in general. Is there any part, any particular?
Yeah, you inspire.
Oh, come on, that's only when I'm lathering up. But other than that,
you're such a good person, and put out so much good information and support. That's like really important, man.
Oh,
that's,
you're sweet.
If you don't have that, you're alone. It's really nice.
Well,
thank you.
You know, you must have taken your inspiration maybe from your dad or whoever was first starting you out in the business, you know.
He was my best friend.
Well, but you've got a real knack for hospitality. I think of you as Mr. Hospitality. Okay, I may be Mr. Restaurant right now. But you are definitely Mr. Hospitality. You're very warm, you know, to anybody that comes into your restaurants, and you know, you've got great ideas, and you exude, you know, kind of come into my space. I'm welcoming you. Not every restaurateur does that. And some people, you know, work the room from my years, and they're very gruff, and they don't really, you know, pay a lot of attention. But you look people in the eye, and you put your arm around them, and you know, it's a really welcoming feeling, and I think people, you know, like to go to your joints because of that. And I think of your places as joints, by the way. I don't feel that they're, you know, fine dining, you know, spots. Nick's Martini Lounge, which we're going to talk about after the break, is really, you know, one of those places that you could go and, you know, dress up and really have that nice you know, martini feel, and, you know, feel like you're Sinatra or Dorothy L'Amour, you know. I guess we're dating ourselves, aren't we? But, you know, you know, but nonetheless, you know, I always liked that about that particular spot. You know, I just think that one of the ingredients that really is an intangible in the restaurant business is this congeniality, is this hospitality, is this ability to have a personality that comes through in your food, your decor, which leads me to a quick question before we go to break, because I'm Dr. D is telling me I got 30 seconds. Art plays a big part in your restaurants, and has, is that correct?
Absolutely.
And
they're doing a book right now on my first restaurant, on all the art and architecture and design we had in there.
You're doing a book.
Yeah, well, somebody's doing a book, and they're doing a big part on a big piece on us. You know, all the art and architecture we had in their first restaurant.
All right, hold that thought, because we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Larry Nicola with Mr. Restaurant. I'm Will Knox, and we'll be right back to talk about art and other things relating to Larry Lorenzo Nicola.
Mr. Restaurant is a tasty new segment on The Jeremiah Show. Host Will Knox, renowned restaurant real estate specialist, serves up a fresh look at the restaurant business. On the menu, celebrity chefs, startups, operators, deal makers, designers, and those are just some of the appetizers. Look for all of Mr. Restaurant shows. Tell your smart speaker to play The Jeremiah Show, Mr. Restaurant.
Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. While I'm doing this and that and the other thing at the very same time, I'm having a great time on The Jeremiah Show, the greatest show in the history of the world. For the love of God, subscribe. No, seriously, subscribe.
Hello, this is Larry Lorenzo Nicola, and I'm up here in Ojai at Ojai Roti at my new restaurant. It's a Lebanese French picnic, and it's a really comfortable place with beautiful hand-selected wine by our sommelier, and we have rotisserie chicken. It's a Lebanese style with all the beautiful sides from the beautiful area of Ojai. We'd love to have you up here. It's an all-outdoor picnic area. Our goal is now to grow this concept. I've really had fun today on this show, and you've been listening to Mr. Restaurant. Thank you.
Welcome, Los Angeles. The Jeremiah Show is now on Radio Candy Radio. Discover a world of emotions, your digital radio. The Jeremiah Show airs 10 p.m. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. RadioCandyRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Mariel Hemingway, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
We're back with Lorenzo Nicola, also known as Larry Nicola. Larry,
hello.
Thank you very much for being on Mr. Restaurant today. Where we left off, we were talking about art and how it relates to your restaurants. So go ahead, talk to me.
Well, our first restaurant we had, we opened, of course, you know, we're a newbie, you know, we're just doing this. And this one guy kept bugging me to hang his art because I had some posters on the wall. I said, well, okay, let's do an opening and let's bring your art down. Let's see what happens. We got hundreds of people down there. Hundreds of people showed up. It was a really cool scene.
And this is Silver Lake, right?
Yeah.
Pretty grungy.
Echo Park, and it was just kind of cutting edge stuff. And we sold stuff, and we were busy. We brought hundreds of people that we wouldn't ordinarily had in the restaurant. So it turns out we started doing it about every month. And then it started to catch on. And then we opened the bar, the Martini Lounge, and we started doing it. There was a guy, Billy Poveda, my dear, dear, dear friend. And he worked with us. Then he opened the Martini. He helped us open the Martini Lounge, or he hosted that Wednesday in the Martini Lounge. So I think martinis were $2, and it was like this provocative art on the walls. And sometimes we had fashion shows right on the bar, and it was outrageous. And it brought thousands of people into the bar and the restaurant. And we were known as sort of this gallery, and it was art while you eat. And we were in several publications, and, actually, we were on the cover of Wet Magazine and all these publications about all the art we had. And we had some of the great Latin artists because, you know, Silver Lake, Los Feliz, the area, there was a lot of these in Echo Parks, a lot of these great Latin artists. And we showed, you know, everybody from Carlos Almarez to Frank Ramiro. I mean, we had some superstars there, and it was in this cool place that everybody felt it was home. So,
well, you know, the people in a restaurant are art. Oftentimes people go out to restaurants to look at people and what they're wearing and how they're acting. But oftentimes, you know, the food is also a work of art at a particular type of restaurant, but having it on the walls and surrounding you kind of like brings it all together. And I think there are very few people. I can remember Peter Morton used to have just tremendous art on his walls at Morton's, and you know, I believe that you know, there are others that, you know, pride themselves in putting either their own personal artwork or others, you know, into play because it just adds another dimension. So you're to be applauded for that. What happened, you know, now? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, getting back to the restaurant. Yeah. Also, you know, people say, well, what's the restaurant business about? And I say, well, you start talking, then you go, well, really, it's about art and arithmetic. You know, art is the restaurant, you know, the beautiful restaurant, the beautiful food, the beautiful decor, you know, all these things. But it also has to do with arithmetic. If you have art and you don't have arithmetic, you're probably going to last a week. If you have art and arithmetic, it enables you, you're able to sustain. You know, how do people say, how do you stay in business this long? So, well, you know, you have to have some semblance of organization where you could pay the bills to keep these walls covered with these beautiful art and serve this beautiful food and have these beautiful people walking around with all this food. So it's really about art and arithmetic.
Did people want to buy the art? Did you ever sell the art? Was it ever on consignment from artists?
Oh, yeah, we sold a ton of it, and I have a bunch of it.
Well, the most famous restaurant with art is in St. Paul de Vence, where you'd get a Picasso, Cezanne, or, any of those, you know, of the period who couldn't afford to eat, and they would, you know, work for their food.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and it would hang, and now they're masterpieces, needless to say. So that was kind of the idea that you had, too. You would work with some starving artists, they put their work up, and they'd sell.
And I got a little collection.
And you've got your own collection.
Yeah.
And you're an artist yourself, is that correct?
I'm painting like crazy right now. Yeah.
Is it a release for you?
Oh, my God. It's just, I can't wait. I was going to go to bed about 10 o'clock last night. I'm really tired, too. I said, geez, I got to, let me paint for a while. I started painting, and a couple hours later, I keep thinking about the painting. It's like, wow.
So as much as you like a martini, you like to paint now.
I love paint. That's my new release.
But you love martinis, which led me to the question of the VOD box. Why? Okay, you created Nick's Martini Lounge. Was it called Nick's Martini Lounge, or was it called Nick's of Beverly Hills?
Well, it was Nick's Restaurant and Martini Lounge. And then it kind of morphed into Nick's Beverly Hills. But with the Martini Lounge, and then, but we were always known for our vodka. So it is how it happened. Somebody was asking me, because we had all these vodkas. They said, is there anybody that can take you on a tour of vodka? And I said, well, not really. So with my son, Luke, we started traveling to Poland and Sweden and France and all these places where all these beautiful distilleries are, and started filming it. And, you know, from Chopin, they're flying us out there in helicopters and at these castles in Poland, mm-hmm. and on fox hunts up near Russia and all these.
I'm in. Let's do it.
We're having the best time of our lives and, you know, learning more about vodka. So when I came back, I created this room in the back of the bar called the VOD box. It was a 9x12 freezer. And I had these faux furs made, and you put on these furs and walked in and drank some of the best vodkas in the world. And it really saved the restaurant. Really. It really, really took it to another level. And then I was doing all these interviews and stuff, and they said something, they asked me something, well, what are you? And I said, well, I'm the vodka tour. And so I took on the title of vodka tour, and I am the only vodka tour that I know of. And I'm not doing as much in vodka anymore, but I surely love a great martini.
Well, I'm telling anyone out there in the universe that's listening to this, if you've got a space, and I could stand behind this, if you've got a space that's as big as a walk-in freezer, refrigerator walk-in freezer, put in the VOD box, bring in Larry Lorenzo Nicola, and have him set up your VOD box, because you will add to your restaurant incrementally some big time revenue, because that was a ball to go in there. It was a glass wall that you could look out and you could see everybody in the restaurant, and you're doing shots. And it was at that time, I guess, what, $20, $25 for four shots or something like that. You know, today it'd probably be $2,000. Just kidding. But ostensibly, you know, it was a great experience to walk in there and pretend like you were in these Russian sables and put on the Cossacks hats and, you know, just literally have a great time in a very small space. And it was a wonderful concept that I think still to this day has got really great legs.
It was a lot of fun.
In addition to your legs.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
And we won't go there.
Drinking vodka at 28 degrees is that's what I figured it was the best temperature to taste vodka. And that's when vodka tastes the best. They say to drink it warm. No, you drink it at 28 degrees, and or take it out of the freezer, pour a nice glass of vodka.
Do you ever have vodka with ice? I mean, is that a good thing, or just to keep the, should you keep the bottle cold?
Club soda or something in it.
No, but you shouldn't add ice to it, right?
No.
Just have it cold.
Just have it cold.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a break again and go into what happened after the VOD Box and the Martini Lounge closed, because you made a dramatic move up north to Ojai. So we'd like to learn a little bit about that. We'll be right back with Larry Lorenzo Nicola. And I'm Will Knox, and this is Mr. Restaurant. We'll be right back.
Welcome, Somerset, England. The Jeremiah Show is now on Core Radio. Keep on rocking to the core. Core Radio. The Jeremiah Show airs at 10 p.m. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Core Radio. Rocks.
Hey there, I'm Caleb.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Joshua.
And we are a girl named Tom.
Go to girlnamedtom.com to hear more of our music, buy merchandise, and learn about our story. You're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
You've been listening to The Jeremiah Show. I am Miles Zuniga from Fastball.
Hey, this is Tim.
And this is Christian. We're L1011.
Hi, this is Ron Sexsmith on The Jeremiah Show.
And we're back with The Jeremiah Show.
Okay, here we are, back with Larry Lorenzo Nicola, a very well-respected restaurateur out of L.A. who now bides his time in Ojai and L.A. So tell us about that. Why'd you come to Ojai? What happened there?
Well, it's a beautiful town, and I came up here and went to Farmer's Market and visited my friend up here, and he was doing bread, a very nice bread. And it's very sought after sourdough. And, you know, I had this concept that I've had for about 25, 30 years. And it was originally, I called it Picnic. And it was something really that I've been trying to really put together, but I haven't done it. It's a picnic serving rotisserie chicken, all these beautiful vegetables, nice breads and salads and things like that, but very innovative and very kind of hip in a nice way, but very comfortable. And so when I was up here, I had sold Nick's Martini Lounge. And so I was up here and decided, let's put these two concepts together, the bread and then the picnic concept. We couldn't use the name, so we used Ojai Roti, and we put it together. And my partner does the bread. He does the bread off-site now, and I run the restaurant.
And his name is?
Claude Mann. And, really...
Very well-respected baker.
Really well-respected baker and good guy. And so we have this Lebanese-French picnic that we call Ojai Roti.
So now you're back to your roots. You're right back to where you started with your grandmother.
It's a Lebanese-French picnic.
Got it.
I moved from Beverly Hills and threw away my suit. Now I'm the Lebanese-French, I'm the Lebanese Ralph Lauren up here. I wear my jeans and t-shirt and have a good time. So people say, do you like it up in Ojai? I said, well, it's 2 minutes to golf, 2 minutes to get a beer, and 2 minutes to go on a hike. So where do you want to live, really? It's, you know how wonderful it is. And so we opened this and we're doing really well. It's doing well and well received. And I always wanted to, kind of see it in action. So we're seeing it in action, and the food works really good. We have a wine program. We have a sommelier, and we have wines within 70 miles of Ojai.
Oh, you don't go out of that neighborhood to get any other wines? You stay
very local? No, we don't go to Napa or anything like that.
Very local.
Except we have a few wines from France and Lebanon, and the rest is within 70 miles, as are the beers. And the only soft drinks we sell are a watermelon, like a watermelon water with the rose water, and fresh lemonade. And we have a non-alcoholic kombucha. We have a Flying Everest kombucha hard cider, and the rest are wines and beers, but no Cokes, nothing like that. So it's real. We get to know the farmers up here. We deal with a lot of farmers, a lot of organic produce, and God, it's like what better place can you have with an appellation that just the produce just rolls down the hill to the restaurant? I mean, it's like pretty amazing.
So in your trajectory, you go from growing up in Silver Lake and then getting your kind of legs, so to speak, in the restaurant business in this kind of gritty urban environment. You go downtown, then you move uptown to Beverly Hills. Now you're in the country, so to speak, because you're in Ojai. That's a real, real move, man. You went about 180 degrees from where you started.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any challenges to operating in a small town like this?
I gotta say, I think that we've been fortunate. I think this town is really nice. I think people accepted the food really well. I mean, in a small town like this, you have to show people that you're going to work hard. And at my age, I'm still working.
You're like a young man.
Yeah, like a young man.
You're a wiser man.
Yeah, not every day do I feel that way, but I definitely.
Are you shooting your age yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
We'll get you back to 70s.
Yeah. But I love it up here. I still like the crazy shit, like stuff. Like, my consulting.
We can say stuff on the air.
My consulting career was fun. I would go into the jungle in Costa Rica and do a resort there. And I would go to Belize on the beach there and create a resort. And now I'm up here creating this up here. And it's really, really well received. And I just love the experience of going into a place, learning new people, making new friends. Yeah, I've made a zillion friends up in Ojai. I mean, if you walk around LA, you don't meet people like you meet in Ojai.
It is a community. It's a very
I can walk down
intimate.
The street and get something welded. I can do, get something fixed or, do a lot of things up here and that you can't ordinarily. So I like the adventure. We still have a house in LA. My beautiful wife, Kelly, we go back and forth and it's fun, but we're up here. We can take a drive up 33 and just lose our minds. So,
well, do you think that this concept is scalable? What about this concept really drives people to it? And are you only open for dinner, I think? Is that right? Or are you open for lunch as well?
And we're open for lunch. We're gonna expand the day parts pretty soon, but it's expandable. Yes, it is. It's a concept that can be duplicated into a few locations, and it's best to keep them close within maybe it's 100 miles so you can support the other ones. But yes, it is, and that's my plans to put a few of these together. And I'm working on that now, and I hope to see success in that soon.
So in building something that's scalable, and we're going to go take one more break, I'm told, in about a minute, but ostensibly when you're building mechanically in your mind and then on paper and then actually in operation, this first concept, are you looking to really try to build something that can be rolled out? Did you think that this was something you wanted to roll out? Or was it a one-off, you know, concept like you'd done other restaurant concepts? Was this something that in your mind you'd always felt, you know, you could have many of these Ojai Rotis? And you weren't thinking of it as Ojai Roti at the time. You were just thinking as a French Lebanese picnic idea, yeah. Right?
But what was called rotisserie. What was called a picnic.
Picnic.
But yes, it's always been something that I wanted to roll out always.
Because your experience is always, you know, a fine dining restaurant, you know.
One of a kind. And I do like architecture too. So I always like to be in interesting buildings. And I think we're going to keep it at that way. You know, the way that we can get into some interesting buildings that are creative, like the one in Ojai is a super.
Well, super yes, building. That location is an old 1920s gas station, right?
Yeah.
There's an outbuilding, you know, where the cars were serviced, and an in-building where there was some servicing going on. And, you know, it's a huge patio. And I think people love the idea that it's a community that you're serving, and it's non-offensive food, and it seems to be extremely well-received because the price points are well-received.
Yeah.
You know, it's not super expensive. You don't need to make a reservation. You can drop in. But we're going to talk a little bit more about all the scalability and the business aspect of it after we return from our final break with Larry Lorenzo Nicola. Thank you very much. And we'll be right back on Mr. Restaurant with Will Knox.
Jeremiah's top 10 new artist picks on Radio India Alliance. Each week, the Radio India Alliance is a chart service that allows indie recording artists an opportunity to have chart placements. We don't charge. We support RadioIndiaAlliance.com.
Hi there, everybody. This is Ann Heach.
Hey, everybody. I'm Art Alex Hux from the band Everclear.
My name's Danny Dreho.
And you're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
Jeremiah, you're loved, homie.
You need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at hjlrestaurantadvisors.com.
Hey, this is Jeff Skunk Baxter. Please open your heart and reach out to a veteran and let them know, number one, that they are loved and respected. You won't give up if they don't give up. And you're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Will Knox, also known as Mr. Restaurant, and I'm with Mr. Congeniality, Mr. Hospitality, and a Mr. Restaurant unto himself, Larry Nicola, also known as Lorenzo, to those who are getting to know him really well and personally up in Ojai, where he spends a lot of his time, but not all of his time. But he has developed a concept called Ojai Roti. And tell us a little bit more, Larry, when we were talking at the break about the scalability when you're building this brand. How'd you first come up with the name? I mean, you were calling it Picnic, and then how did you pivot out of that? Because Nick is a play on your name, Nicola, and I get the picnic idea. But why didn't you keep the picnic idea?
Well, there was another concept up here that had a name, Le Picnic. So it was just too.
Also similar. In L.A., there's a restaurant called Picnic.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them, and so we decided we better just find a new name. So Claude and I sat down and we came up with Ojai Roti, and it works really good because I think that Ojai is as a destination is good food. It's peaceful. It has a lot of connotation of something that special, you know. So it works really well for us. It's a good come from, and I think the work we put in, and I think that it's been no easy feat. You know, the first we opened for 8 or 9 months, then there was COVID for 2 years, so it was quite a challenge. We didn't know what was going to happen. Well, nobody knew what was going to happen, but luckily we moved all of our seats outside. We had very little seats inside, so we moved everything outside and just opened for to go in the beginning, and then started serving outside, spacing everybody out. And it was kind of set up for success. I don't know. We got lucky.
Well, the patio is a big landmark, you know, for you and big calling cards. So in future restaurants, is that integral? I can remember when I was doing a lot of the early Hard Rock Cafe site selection and that real estate. I was very fortunate to work with Peter Morton and get my own mentoring from him. But ostensibly, what we did with the Hard Rocks, we didn't replicate and have them look like cookie cutter yesterday, you know, type restaurants, or, you know, Fuddruckers, or, you know, TGA. He never wanted to do TGI Fridays, but he always wanted elements to be in there. But no two restaurants would ever look alike. In your particular case, are you saying that there's a certain backbone that'll always be there, like the rotisserie chicken? You're able to see the rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, the elements, there's like, you know, five or six elements that'll always be there.
Such as? You know,
well, such as the out picnic tables, such as the rotisserie, such as DG. I'd like to see DG in all of them. Like, you know,
DG, it's kind of like, DG.
It's kind of like ranchy.
What is DG?
Decomposed granite.
Decomposed granite, for those of you who are not in the country, like Lorenzo Nicola.
And, you know, we have a kind of a ranch fence. Bougainvillea is really important for our... for our color, you know, we have.
So if you went to Poland, okay.
Olive trees.
If you were out in the middle of nowhere, let's just say in Poland, someone said, I'd love to do an Ojai Roti in Poland. That's pretty far-fetched. I get it. Or even Kansas City. You would say bougainvillea, even in the dead of winter, somehow you'd make the feeling of Ojai be evoked in the architecture and the ambiance.
I think let's put it this way: ranchy, okay?
Ranchy.
You might have to use another color, a new plant, but the ranchy, like the tile on the roofs, the metal we use, the fence, the DG, the colors we use. We use a flint and a light beige, and the picnic tables. The picnic tables, and you know, if once we get to maybe the next one, there's some art, specific art that I want to use that we haven't used yet, and that will be ready for the next one.
And where will the next one be? What's your intention?
Well, I'd like to see something in, you know, the east side of Los Angeles, you know.
Going right back to your roots, right? You're going right back where it all started.
Yeah.
That's full circle, man.
I think so.
Well, in finding that location, which is not easy, you need a patio particularly, right?
Yes, we need a patio.
So for anybody listening out there, if you've got a restaurant site, you got a patio, call Mr. Restaurant or call Larry Nicola at Ojai Roti and somehow let him know that you've got something available, because he's looking and you're on a path to really build a lot of these deals, right?
Well, we'll build a few.
Okay, yes, so when you have the idea of building one and then going to number two, those are internally financed or are those with outside financing? What's the best case scenario for you?
We hope to finance the next couple with the same group so we can keep that growing, because the idea is to have one supporting the next. If you have too many different companies, you can't share the resources. So if you have one company that's bigger, you can share the resources. That way also you can have a commissary kitchen that supports the others. If they're all independent companies, it's really hard to do that. It's really tricky. So I think it's better. I think the next step would be good to put the company together to really stay together for a few.
So you would like to build the next location with a big enough kitchen, because the one in Ojai is a small, very tiny, 1,000 square foot building where your kitchen is,
it's made us be, it's pushed us to be work harder and be successful.
So you're successful in spite of the space.
Yeah. It's 1,100 square feet. I mean, inside.
So in the next location, if you can build a restaurant with that kitchen as the hub and the other restaurants will be the spoke, then ultimately you could say, I might do three more in this location where the kitchen could basically serve two or three other restaurants. The kitchen could act as that heart and soul. And then from there, you'll bring in another round of financing, hopefully, and grow this thing into a much more scalable and known brand, right?
That's my vision.
That's your goal.
Yeah.
And that was your vision all along for 25 years.
Yes.
Well, I got to tell you, Larry, it's really been a pleasure being with you today and hearing about all of this, and particularly your life and the trajectory, and I'm really, really touched that you spent the time with me. I have one real final question to ask you, and that is, other than the inspirations we talked about and getting revved up in the morning, you know, what advice would you give for a young person who's starting today that has the desire to go into the restaurant business as a concept guy or person, an operator? They want to own, they want to operate, and they want to grow it. What advice would you give that person?
I would say, you know, get some advice, because a lot of people have the wrong idea to open a restaurant. They just want to open it because of a romantic idea. You have to really be willing to put your back into it and have some background. You have to hire somebody that's got some background, a financial planner or a lawyer or somebody that's been in the business that kind of helps you. Cause a lot of people, if you had 30 different people come up to me and ask this, they want to open a restaurant and I could talk to them for 10 minutes. I could tell you in 2 minutes whether they should be opening that restaurant or not. Because they have to be careful, because money is hard to come by and people don't want to lose their money.
Oftentimes you get one shot and, you know, 90% of the restaurants fail. So, you know, coming out of the box, you better have your group together, your money together, your whole attitude together. And I would think your best advice from what I'm hearing is get good advice.
Get good advice. If you have to hire somebody, do it. But don't sail alone if you don't know what you're doing.
Larry, thank you for this time. It was just really a pleasure, and I'm just really touched that you gave it to me and Mr. Restaurant, because your time is very valuable and you're a very valuable asset to the restaurant business. So,
my brother, I appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
You know that, and I love you very much, and thank you. It's a pleasure being on with you.
Well, let's share the love.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you very much. Over and out, everybody. This is Will Knox, Mr. Restaurant. We'll see you next time on the Back Nine and in the Grotto.
All right.
Bye-bye.
One, two, three. Today I walk down the street I used to wander. Yeah, I shook my hand and made myself a bet. But it was all these things that I don't think I remember. Hey, how lucky can one man get? I brush my shoes and I hum from the rearview mirror. Brides the admiration in a blind spot of regret. There was all these things that I don't think I remember. Hey, how lucky I can one man get.
This is comedian Maj Jobrani, and you are listening to The Jeremiah Show. Listen, man.
Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify. The Jeremiah Show. Look for the black label. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the air at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dugan, a.k.a. Dr. D, Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas at jeremiah@thejeremiahshow.com or on Messenger, on Facebook, or Instagram. The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins and sound and engineer producer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. And me, your announcer, Tony Kelly. Communicate, listen more, and evolve.
I'ma put my guns in the ground. I can't shoot them anymore. That cold black cloud is coming down.
This is Miles Copeland. Yeah, I just had the honor of speaking to the Jeremiah Show. Who would have believed that little old me would have the opportunity to speak on such a prestigious show? And they even talked about my book, Two Steps Forward, One Step Back, My Life in the Music Business. So it was a great pleasure to be on that show, the Jeremiah Show.
I love you.